Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 344. It's a Bloom Board Tuesday, everybody. We're doing live pitching Bloom Boards for you. Going to talk about a lot of rare stake red, as you'd expect if you've been playing fantasy baseball this season. We'll get to some recent news because might as well be the streets are red for many there. And much, much more. Before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How we doing, my friend?
You covered it well in the intro there. The streets of red, rare steak red. Trying to keep my head above water right now, Bubba. From a fantasy baseball standpoint, it's been a brutal start. Probably brutal for a lot of people, just because of so many injuries. That's the one thing keeping me sane is like. Misery loves company, I think, or at least I do. Yeah. If you're running pure injury wise right now, you should be very thankful. It's been difficult, but I don't know. You just got to keep going. It's all you can do.
It's all you can do. There's just people hate to hear it, but we still have 5 months to go. So
everyone else has injuries. Yeah. Pretty much.
I'd been kind of getting hit here and there, nothing crazy. Last week, I finally got the real pinch where it got to me. And I did the Fab show with Ben, we recap our ad drops. There was one league, I think I made five moves. It was I called it the line shift. We are redoing the entire bench right now because it was just nastiness. So,
Yeah, I think Vegas auction, I had 5 guys go on the IL last week. And then I fabbed a dude who went on the IL before lineup lock, Eric Miller. So that was cool, too.
Well, there is this one guy that said, just don't worry about the Giants bull.
I wonder.
I'm going to throw that out there.
Probably should turn the volume up in these earbuds and actually listen to you every now and then.
I'll take a lot of chances on things, but when it comes to the Giants,
I did ignore your advice by going to the Giants bullpen, and I get a 0 out of it.
Now, did I think he was going to get hurt? No, but
the alternative, he probably just gets blown up, and
zero might be better right about now.
Exactly.
So, it's rough out there. It's rough, but you could be a Detroit Tigers fan. You could be a guy that picked the number one pitcher in baseball, the top 3 in your fantasy draft, maybe number 1 in a main event, per se. Tarek Skubal is on the IL with loose bodies in his elbow. That's the newest thing. Multiple, it's what Edwin Diaz had. Carlos Rodon had the surgery in the offseason. Rodon's returning later this week. That's a plus. But Tarek Skubal to the IL, going to have surgery on Wednesday. And the surgeon, this is always great. He could miss, 6 weeks or 12 weeks. Just depends on what they find when they go in there. Most of these surgeries take 2 to 3, usually 3 to 4 months. So I'm saying it's a minimum 3 months is what I'm looking at, Ryan, which puts us in August, maybe even September, when things are all said and done. So how are you approaching this Tarek Skubal situation? Not trying to boast, my only share, I have one DC share. I didn't have a lot of early draft picks.
Right. I think you have to. If there's a chance you get 2 months of Skubal, got to hold it. It's brutal. I know you're probably Skubal teams have other injuries you have to deal with, so you have to prioritize that with other stashes. But this one, that's a gut punch. I don't want to say we could see it coming, but the last 2 Skubal starts, right? He's kind of been complaining of elbow pain and just didn't seem like things were trending well, even though Skubal was pitching well and making it through starts. That stuff all finally came to a head with the news you just don't want to hear. For Skubal himself, too, man. I know he had TJ already. Now he's got this heading into a free agent contract year where he was probably set for a $400 million contract, maybe more.
Definitely the highest deal in baseball, for sure.
Yeah, because, he's under 30. He's the best pitcher in baseball. Probably still will get a massive contract because of all the surgeries, this is the one you, I guess, want to get, the loose bodies, just because it is kind of you go in and clean it up and not really any muscle stuff, but still brutal for him. He's so close to a massive payday to have that is tough. Brutal for Detroit. Their rotation on the IL right now is Skubal, Reese Olson, Casey Mize, Jackson Jobe, Troy Melton, who's coming back soon, Justin Verlander, who's coming back soon. You got Sawyer Gibson Long just got hurt in AAA. You've got more than an entire rotation on the IL if you're a Detroit fan. That sucks.
Sadly, there's multiple teams that you could do that game with. I've been looking at different things. There's multiple teams full IL starting rotations right now, which is ridiculous. So, yeah, tough on Detroit. Like, this is where you and I differ. Yeah, I guess I'll wait till the surgery drops down and see the news there, but I'm probably would drop Tarek Skubal. As bad as pitching is now, I want the roster spots to pitch with guys. I've passed. It's going to be one of those conversations. It's been all over Twitter. Like, everyone's on a different page there. We'll see what the right or wrong answer is. In the end, it's just when he comes back, how long is the leash? Like, a million questions I have that we won't know for a long time. So it could be a bummer, but yeah, I get it. He's elite, but just what are you going to get when he gets back? Is it
the same Skubal? It's wild, man. Detroit, you're talking about like for actionable stuff for fantasy. We're going to want to stream against Detroit pitching because for all the injuries they have, they still in the rotation have Jack Flaherty. It's like the worst pitcher in baseball, and Framber Valdez,
he's an absolute tool.
I was looking at my phone tonight and I saw the box score. I saw like 10 runs, 7 earned. And I just knew like something bad happened for Framber Valdez. And sure enough, in the Discord, we saw him plunking. I think it was Trevor Story. So hey, at least Tiger fans, you've got Framber, the lovable Framber, and Jack Flaherty at the, you know, toeing the bump every 2 out of every 5 games.
Did you see what AJ Hinch said after the game about the Framber situation?
Yeah, I mean, pretty tough to defend what he did anyway. Yeah. He's got the rap sheet now, so not great. Yeah,
there was a really funny gif on Twitter about a half hour ago that I saw, and I don't condone anybody, you know, hanging themselves obviously, but it was very funny. It was that gif of, again, I don't remember which movie it is, where like there's the guy and they put the noose on him. It's everywhere. We see it all the time. It was a Tiger fan going, like, we lost Skubal, Framber's like something, and now we get Jack Flaherty on day 3. Like, it's like it's over.
I think Flaherty pitches tomorrow.
Pitches tomorrow. No, that's why the tweet came out. He's all, okay, you lose Skubal. He's all, sure. Flaherty is up next. It's just like,
hey man,
this is the world we're living in.
This brings out emotions. This brings out emotions.
Yep, sports. They're great. They're painful. It's one of those things. Speaking of painful, Emilio Pagan. Good lord. If anybody watches soccer and looks like when a guy gets shot and falls to the ground, that was Emilio Pagan after a pitch. One whole pitch in Wrigley Field on Tuesday evening. Looks like he re-entered the hamstring that was previously hurt. Like, looks like he probably tore it off the bone the way he collapsed. Obviously, he's going to have more testing. I'm not a doctor. I just watched the videos everybody else watched, and he had to get carted off the field. Like, if he's been out for at least a month, this feels like it's a season-ending surgery type thing. But we'll find out later this week.
Yeah, I mean, it just looked like it popped, and he was just in severe pain, could not put any weight, and just got carted off. So I would imagine Emilio Pagan is out for quite a while. Fab-wise, this will be the next competition for your Fab dollar, and it is a decent competition because there is an opening. There's going to be an opening for a while. I don't think this is like a Palencia to the IL or Raisel Iglesias to the IL type thing where it's just a couple weeks. I think this is going to be a while. So depending on your fantasy analyst du jour, there's going to be some takes for Tony Santian, some takes for Graham Ashcraft. I believe it's one of those two, most likely. They're both righties. They're both pitching well on the surface. Skills are just okay. I think they both have like a 10% strikeout minus walk. I lead Santian.
Yep.
But that's just more of a gut feel for me. And I think you do too.
I lean Santian. He got the calls first. But I like them both. Like I was telling you off air, I have shares of both of those guys throughout my drafting holds because I knew like just the skills that Ashcraft showed out of the bullpen last year, he's showcasing again this year. Santian was more the eighth inning guy last year with the potential saves when Pagan was, you know, overused, I guess. And Santian got a save chances already when Pagan was first hurt. So I'm leaning Santian as well. I wouldn't be shocked if they both get their fair shares. So you go that direction. Just a little heads up. Kirby Yates was activated from the IL on Tuesday, and Ryan Zephyrshin gets the multi-inning save. So there you go, everybody. Baseball's great. So yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm leaning the Santillan. Let's see how the week plays out. Like, you don't wish injuries on anybody, but at least this injury happened on a Tuesday, so we have like four more games to see how things go before Sunday. I have a little bit of an idea.
Yeah, Pagan fans would disagree with you, but
well, as I was saying, you don't wish injury. I prefaced it, but if we're gonna have to make a change, at least we have time to look at said change.
Agreed.
All right, Yainer Diaz was taking batting practice on Monday, and then had a left oblique strain and hit the IL. The latest report is Yainer Diaz will be out a while with his left oblique strain, according to the manager of the Astros. We don't know what a while is, but this is painful because Yainer Diaz was not playing great, did the same thing last year, got it going in the second. I did it 2 years in a row. And so we like talked about him recently on a Bloom board. Like, oh, just wait. His skills are still there. We'll be good.
Yep.
Well, skills don't matter if you're on the IL. So I'm not at drop mode yet because, you know, we'll talk about some other rest in pieces that are gone at the catcher position. But Yainer Diaz, this might be a drop once we get a little more news come Sunday.
Yeah, it might be. It sounds like this is going to be at least a month and a half type deal. And it's hard to hold three catchers. If there are any Yainer Diaz, Agustin Ramirez teams out there, let us know. We'd like to share in your misery. So that was brutal. Christian Vasquez, I guess, is the primary. With maybe some Cesar Salazar, who was called up. Christian Vasquez, I don't know, maybe serviceable second catcher. Just really no power there, but he does make a lot of contact and is hitting at the bottom of a very good Houston lineup. So hitting .316 right now at the 16% K rate. So that'll play as a second catcher if you want to look at Christian Vasquez and you need somebody. Just don't expect much, if any, power. It's kind of crazy. Christian Vasquez has never had a season between 10 and 20 homers. He's all single-digit homers, but then he randomly had a 23-homer season in the happy fun ball year of 2019. That's not coming back.
No, that ain't coming back, but the short porch and left could help a little. So I'm not going to fully count off like maybe 11. Is that a possibility? Maybe, kind of. Probably not, but we'll see.
Probably not.
But he's been very serviceable as a catcher 2 and 15. So there's going to be a lot of catchers to discuss on Thursday night's Fab show. Like, they're really
good. Can't wait. There will.
I'm gonna be doing some stretches to get ready to appease the masses because people are gonna need some catching help. So we're gonna see what we can do there, and Vasquez could easily be one of them. Sticking in Houston, Carlos Correa. Now, we mentioned on Monday in batting practice, Yainer Diaz got hurt. On Tuesday in batting practice, Carlos Correa sprained his ankle. Went on the IL. He's gonna see a foot specialist on Wednesday. Ryan, I don't know about you, but when you sprain an ankle and within like 2 hours, they're already like, we got to see a foot specialist. I hate the sound of that.
I do too. I am concerned. Obviously, given Carlos Correa's injury history, this is not great. Nick Allen started. And if Correa is out for any...
Wait. It's the latest report right now. Literally just came through on Carlos Correa from Brian McTaggart. Says Carlos Correa suffered a significant ankle injury that could keep him out for weeks, maybe months. Correa suffered the injury while taking swings in batting practice.
So usually when you say wait while I'm talking, it's because I'm like mentioning someone on the wrong team. But
no, this was
scared me there for a second.
Before we get deep into this, like, we have a more updated timeline. Now we're talking weeks, if not months, right now.
Okay,
so this is
unfortunate. That's a drop. Nick Allen is not an ad. Good defender, not a good hitter. I wonder if the Astros will try something else there.
Nah, the bright side is Jeremy Peña starts a rehab assignment this week, and hopefully he comes back.
I totally forgot about
Peña. And what it does is it locks in Isak Paredes. Remember in draft season we didn't know where Isak would play. Yep. Isak has played all season because of injuries. Like, it has just worked out. So. Yeah, it looks like because I even wrote about it in PT Tomorrow that comes out on Wednesday, that there's going to be a logjam pretty soon when Peña comes back. How's this infield going to play out? And I expected maybe someone having to go to the outfield because the outfield still stinks, but that's not going to be the case. Business as usual in Houston. Once Peña comes back, just know Carlos Correa, who I think he can drop, is what I'll say there. All right, Roman Anthony, a couple games ago, swung, hurt his hand. Usually that looks like a hamate injury. Went did some further testing, went back to Boston, has a sprained wrist, is going to see a hand specialist now. Again, we're doing the specialist thing. Never liked that, Ryan. Thoughts on Roman Anthony, who's also had a quite a disappointing start to the season.
Yeah, tough start for Roman Anthony, and this doesn't get any better. It doesn't get any better for Boston fans. Like, just a tough scene all around. Roman Anthony hitting .229, man, with one homer and two steals. Like, pretty much Gene Segura-ing you all season, playing every day and doing nothing. So, I don't know. Actually, I'm interested to see if Roman Anthony's out for a while. I'm interested to see, like, does Boston try Masataka Yoshida in the outfield and get him some outfield eligibility? I have no idea. I hope at least they play him against DH or as DH. So you can get some batting average help there if you want to go there. But this is a bad season for Boston, and I mean, only getting worse. Already 10 games out and in last place in the AL East.
They're letting Framber Valdez punk him at the same time. It's just not good in Boston. All right. I'm only bringing this up because we haven't been able to talk about this yet. I talked about it with Ben Tidd. Everybody wanted my opinions on Sunday. I was busy being a dad, not to Augustin Ramirez, to my actual daughter. Yeah, the Goose has been sent to AAA. He was underperforming. I'll give him that. But he goes to AAA. The return of the Mac, gets promoted, got his first big league hit on Tuesday. So that was cool. Great defensive catcher, as we all know. The part I just wanted to throw in here that's been new since I talked with Ben, I believe, on Monday, is the Marlins have come out and said that Goose is in AAA to work on his catching defense. He's not going to play another position. And that concerns me if you have Mack and Hicks already up in the bigs.
Right.
Like, there's no room for three catchers around here. And that's where the question is. Everyone's like, you're crazy for dropping Goose. I put bids in, didn't win them this week. So I still roster Goose at this point in time, but I really don't know how you can, to be totally honest.
Right. Cause I was hoping for, yeah, like we're going to move him to first base. Maybe he learns it, picks it up in a couple weeks and he's back and he's playing and doesn't have to worry about the rigors of catch. I mean, that would make sense. Cause Joe Mack from all I hear is a very good defensive catcher. I was also not terribly enthused by the fact that the Marlins are going to work on his defense and keep Augustin Ramirez as a catcher. Like, how quickly is that going to turn around? I don't think very quickly. So that probably lengthens the timeline for the Goose in AAA. Joe Mack is obviously a, you know, potential fantasy replacement. I don't really know how good he is for fantasy. That's the only thing. There's not much pop. He had three homers, 103 plate appearances at AAA this year, but just a 5% barrel rate. Great plate skills, great plate approach. But again, if you're playing regular 5x5 and someone who has a great walk rate doesn't run very often, that walk rate is kind of wasted for fantasy. So, I don't know. I feel like Joe Mack is a low-end second catcher myself.
Yeah, I picked him up in Tout this week because I was running out Tyler Hanneman because there's no one available in Tout.
Jeez. So,
yeah, it's bad. It's bad over there.
So Tout's even deeper than NFBC 15-teamers, so yeah, I get it. So
it was tough to get. So I jumped on that because he was available without having to play in that
format. And it's OBP.
Yep. If you ain't, the return of the Mac is a, if he ain't down with OBP, man, you got all the 80s rats coming out. This is awesome.
Hey, your Tout team, by the way. I'm sick of sick of talking about my struggles. Your Tout team is up 15 points in first place. Early congratulations there, my friend.
Oh, you just jinxed the shit out of
me. I know. I know. Gianella's got to be happy because he's in second. And
yep. Thank you. We know how good you are. Never mind. I'll just stop you nice now. But yeah, you just jinxed me.
We know how good I am at, yes, you can finish the sentence.
No, I'm just kidding. Pretty much every time you make fun of
somebody, we all know what you're thinking. Everyone knows.
No. All right. But you know, one thing that we can all circle around in this fantasy world, Ramirez Diaz combo in one of my 50s. Yeah, that's
Paul in the chat. That's brutal.
That's rough. One thing we could all get around and celebrate in the fantasy world. Chris Paddock was DFA'd on Tuesday. It was one of those that was the typical teams talk on Monday. Like, Paddock's been horrible. And it's like, oh, we're going to go, you know, check on him, make sure he's not hurt. I think Jason Santu, our buddy, posted it. It was like, Marlins say, check on him to see if Paddock feels good. Marlins, okay, see you later. TF paid him. Can't Phantom IL stitch you. So he's gone, which brought a back and forth all day on Tuesday. Was Robbie Snelling going to get called up on Friday? Was Braxton Garrett going to pitch Tuesday night? So it had to be Robbie Snelling on Friday. I'm still going to laugh if it's a bullpen game, because that'd be the total Marlins thing to do. But what are your thoughts on this one?
I mean, it's either Snelling or like a bullpen. I would imagine they're just lining things up and not trying to kind of, you know, it's going to be the kid's debut on Friday.
It really should be.
They, you know, they got to get the hidden camera social media video ready to go. They don't want to spoil it. So I think it will be Snelling. Once Braxton Garrett pitched tonight in AAA Tuesday night, and pitched deep into the game, there was some thought maybe it would be like a 20 pitch outing, kind of like a bullpen session, a glorified BP, but it was not. So I think it's going to be Snelling. Obviously, let's see if Snelling comes out, right? And we won't even be able to talk about, oh, maybe it'll be announced by the Thursday Fab Show. 40% strikeout rate for Robbie Snelling. Our guy, Martin Sokolsky, has been all over Snelling all draft season, really likes Robbie Snelling. 186 ERA, like some control issues in AAA this year. It's been a 14% walk rate, 38% ball, but just dominant stuff in the minors for Robbie Snelling. He's going to be, I would imagine, very expensive in Fab. A, if he obviously makes a start, but then B, if he looks semi-decent at all.
So I keep joking, like, yes, I want Robbie Snelling to be a thing. I even though some of my early shares I drafted him, I don't have rostered anymore. I still would love to see that take place. But a total Marlins thing here. So, okay, Garrett pitched on Tuesday. He's pretty much out of it. Snelling's supposed to pitch Friday would make sense. Let's not do a bullpen game. Why waste that? So let's look who's available on the 40-man roster. There's one individual that has a 3.09 ERA over six starts at the minor leagues, 300 runs or less in every start, 31 Ks and six walks and 32 innings pitched. Mookie Bradley Blaylock is on the 40-man roster for the Miami Marlins and pitching well at AAA. And, like, can you imagine?
I'm actually openly rooting for that to happen now.
Can you imagine the Twitter streets if, like, Thursday or even Friday morning, they wait till Friday morning to announce that Mookie Blaylock is being promoted.
Yeah,
to pick the start on Friday night.
We should. So Mookie Blaylock is Bradley Blaylock for any newer listeners to the show. Yeah. But that would be hilarious. I didn't even realize.
I didn't realize
he was pitching well.
Yeah. I was like, oh, he's on the 40 man. Let's see. I clicked on his name. I'm like, oh, he actually is pitching well. So this it's not a complete, you know, insane thing to think about. But yeah. It is insane to think about.
I'd be shocked.
I would be.
It would be hilarious.
It would just be so Miami Marlins to do. That's why. All right, Brandon Woodruff. We keep talking about guys seeing specialists. Well, Brandon Woodruff's going to go see Dr. Meister, and that usually does not result in good things, Ryan. We know Woodruff was shut down due to the elbow inflammation after he couldn't throw more than 85 miles an hour. So I guess we'll wait and hear what takes place here, but the Logan Henderson shares in the world just got a lot more comfortable.
That's your big winner here. I mean, it kind of has to be Logan Henderson, who was expensive anyway this past Fab. But I think some of the hesitation, at least for me, was so that's health is still a hesitation. But it was like, what always. If Woodruff's only out for a couple turns? Then what do the Brewers do? But that doesn't seem like it's going to be the case, as Woodruff is off to see Dr. I feel like Dr. Meister has overtaken Dr. Reattach.
Well, Reattach has been quiet.
Physician du jour. Yeah. Reattach has been quiet.
He's been doing more like knees lately. He's been more lower body.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not sure what's going
on. Well, it doesn't help that Reattach is the personal doctor of the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they've been kind of busy over there. So, time is of the essence. He's probably now the doctor of the stars over there. So,
doctor of the stars. What the hell's that?
He's in Hollywood. He's in Hollywood.
Oh, I thought that's like a movie reference or something.
Nah, I'm not that smart. But yeah, I don't think we're going to get good results from Logan Henderson. But we thought the same about Joe Ryan, so we'll see.
Well, Joe Ryan still might be.
For now. Hey, after everyone else's arms are falling off, we get a little longer before his does. So a little positive there. All right, a couple more bits of news here. Steven Matz at the IL on Tuesday with elbow inflammation. only reason I bring this up is he was kind of a popular target, at least in 15s of late. Actually pitched decent in his last start for the Rays. But more importantly, the Rays options in that starting rotation, not great at all.
Do you think they try and extend Griffin Jacks?
Well, they already were going to. He opened up his last one over three innings. Like they said, they are going to stretch him out. This just escalates the stretching part.
Yeah, that's the thing you got to think of. I think Jacks, I forget which team he was on, but
with the Twins, he was a starter in the minors when he first got called up.
And they were the Twins were thinking about converting him back to a starter as well
before he left. Yep.
Yeah, before he left. So this has been done before. So Griffin Jacks, I mean, he will be that. That's just a very interesting. So like, how quickly does Griffin Jacks, you know, can he go five or six innings like this quickly? Even in a few weeks, what does that look like? And B, can Griffin Jacks? I mean, honestly, Griffin Jacks is. Been really bad this year, so you know, can Griffin Jacks handle the move to the rotation and get those elite reliever skills to come with him? I'm somewhat doubtful, but kind of in Rays we trust. The Rays rotation has been performing very well this season, so that's just a really interesting experiment there. How quickly can they extend and get Jacks stretched out, and will he be good?
Yeah, Jacks has made two starts so far, his last two outings. He's gone 2 1/3 and 2 2/3, so five innings. No runs, 2 walks, 4 Ks total. So not horrible, but we've got to start stretching it out is what it comes down to. Yeah. I'm just going to laugh when I had Jacks in like the Vegas League and others, and I dropped them obviously for plenty of obvious reasons. But now, like as bad as pitching is, if he actually becomes a serviceable starter, that would just be full circle. Like, there you go, Bubba. Yes, here you go. All right, last bit of news I have for everybody here. Just a little you say, we say, y'all say Kikuchi update. He's got a shoulder inflammation. He's going to be out. They're shutting him down for 3 to 4 weeks before further evaluating him. Do with that what you wish.
Yeah. Wasn't great when it took like 4 days to read the an MRI.
Braille? Like, did you need your decoder ring from Christmas Story or what? Like, good Lord. Ovaltine, that's the answer. Ovaltine.
But Bubba loves himself a good MRI story. So at least they didn't wait to take the MRI like your boy Max Muncy, A's Max Muncy. At least they didn't wait 2 weeks like for the MRI. Weeks,
freaking idiots. that's what I was waiting for, like with the Roman Anthony thing. Oh, he doesn't need the imaging. Now they're flying him to Boston. Oh, now he's seen a specialist. Like, do we have to do this dance every time? But yeah, I digress. Yeah, you can drop Kikuchi. Don't worry about that. You can drop him.
Yes.
All right, Ryan.
I dropped him Sunday already. So
smart move. But that's enough news for now. There's been a lot of news lately. Got you covered over on the Patreon, folks, if you're curious. Between the Discord and the write-ups almost every evening. You'll stay up to date on the news you need for your fantasy teams. But now let's live boom boards it. Let's have a little more fun than talking about people's arms falling off.
All right, so week two of our live Bloom Boards kind of walkthrough / tour. Again, these are updated daily and available to anyone who wants to support the show and join the Patreon. You get access to these live Bloom Boards, weekly planner, all the other tools, Bubba's write-ups, Bubba's Fab report every week as well. So just a perk to supporting the show. We did hitters last week. We will do pitchers this week. And what we're looking at, there's 5 tabs on this live Bloom Boards for now. We're looking at a year-to-date pitchers tab that's got 3 boards, and these boards are kind of they're pre-made, but since the data updates every day, right, the names are moving and shaking. So we've got the best skills under 50% rostered in 12-team NFBC leagues, and by best skills, we're looking at strikeouts, walks, swinging strikes, and ball percentage. Then we've got, similar to our hitters from last week, we've got our best skills, risers, and fallers from 2026 to 2025. Using swinging strike rate and ball rate to evaluate those guys. We've got a top 15 and a bottom 15 with a lot of interesting names at the bottom of that. We'll probably spend our most time on that one tonight. And then the third board is looking at luckiest versus unluckiest skills pitchers this season, looking at surface ERA versus their Sierra, which is skills independent ERA you can find on Fangraphs. It's my favorite ERA estimator out there. And looking at the three luck factors there, BABIP, left on base rate, and homer to fly. So looking at the luckiest and luckiest pitchers of the year. Those are our three.
Those are the three. So let's get to it. We'll kind of hit on a handful of names on each board. But the first board, maybe not so many, because we're talking best skills less than 50% rostered. And to be honest, best skills is the loose term on this board, because it is red, steak, rare, all over the place, Ryan. We'll start like at the top. It's a reliever in Aaron Ashby, who we've talked about on Fab shows time and time again. It's just as bad as pitching is. You want a guy that can get you wins, good ratios and Ks, and you look at the skills, they check the boxes.
Yeah, and I think Ashby just barely cracks this, because it's not all relievers. There's some type of innings.
Oh, minimum, no, I just said he's the whole, I said we started with a reliever, which made me laugh.
Yeah, which is,
shows
yeah,
how I mean, bad things are.
It shows how bad things are. And just looking at the board again, for if you're watching on YouTube, just looking at the board itself, like there is just so much red on it. Even though we won't talk about a bunch of these guys, like it's emblematic of the pitching pool right now. And it just makes, you know, your fab decisions for pitching so much more important, because there's just not much. And again, this is 12 teamers, like 15s is even crazier. So there's not too many good skilled guys right now is probably the biggest takeaway of this board, unfortunately.
100%. I do want to hit on Jake Irvin, though. He's second on this board. He's 10% rostered, 25% K rate, 10% walk, which for the quick math, there's 15% K to walk, 10% swinging strike, 37% ball rate. I want to bring him up because I've heard of a lot of smart people, people that I respect their opinions in the fantasy game. They've been rostering Jake Irvin in recent weeks. They talk about the underlying skills that Jake Irvin is possessing. I'm still looking at a guy that, you know, it's three earned runs or less in five straight and six out of seven, which that is a plus. I'm not going to deny it. Walks can be an issue for him. Strikeouts are good, but not elite. Like, still, it's more than a K per inning, which is actually really good. What do you see when you look at Jake Irvin? Because I still can't sell myself on this, but there are some smart people that are quite interested in him.
Yeah, I mean, I think the skills look fine. Like, I feel like Jake Irvin's kind of a mid to high end streamer for 15 teamers. I think it's just very much schedule dependent. And Jake Irvin's next three starts are pretty decent. He's at home against Minnesota May 7th. He does have to go to Great American Small Park, but the Reds haven't been that great against righties this year. And then he gets the Mets on May 18th. So, like, at least for stretches, if you can time and kind of stream and schedule someone like a Jake Irvin, who has slightly better than league average skills, I think this can work. It's just the problem is I don't really see, like, you look at the swing, strike, and ball, like those are both worse than league average, and it's just hard to see much of a ceiling with Jake Irvin. So I think he's somewhat safe, but I don't think there's a high ceiling here, and I think it's just very matchup dependent.
And to be fair, I'm not like knocking people, because as Scott mentioned, that's where I was going with this, I roster Patrick Corbin, so like I get it.
Yeah, like, I do too now, all, apparently. Yeah,
because,
yeah,
well, at least you listen to something.
I do listen to some of your stuff.
Yeah. There's a bunch of guys I will take chances on, like Eric Fede and whatnot. So maybe I should take chances on Jake Irvin. As I said, I wasn't knocking it. It was just more, I need to hear more, because I look at even these stats. I'm like, okay, it's good, but it's not jumping off the page. But you made some valid points to be had. We're not going over everybody, but some of these names up top are talking points for a reason. Colin Ray, he's 37% rostered right now. It's a 15% K to walk as well, with a 21% strikeout rate, 6% walk rate. But it's only a 9% swinging strike, 35% ball rate, which is very, very good when we're talking about skills for Colin Ray. And he's been, you know, very serviceable. I guess this is the theme. Like, this is why these are lower rostered guys, but their skills are towards the top list. They're serviceable. Colin Ray, it's been two earned runs or less in I guess six out of seven appearances. He's only made four starts. He got blown up against the Dodgers. We kind of all just let that one slide for most people. But last start, 5 1/3, two earned, no walk, six Ks against the D-backs. Like, he's had some very strong starts, and even the underlying metrics, like, he has a 4.41 ERA, but your xFIPs, your xERAs, they all suggest much better for Colin Ray. So this is a guy that I am starting to open my eyes to. He's more and more widely rostered, Ryan. But what are your thoughts on Colin Ray, who for now He has, you know, taken over the fifth spot in the rotation over the Facade, which rightfully so. Yes. And honestly, there's really no one coming back anytime soon in that rotation.
Yeah, I think Colin Ray is, at least for now, locked into a rotation spot. We've seen like semi-long stretches of Colin Ray being decent. I know he was last year for about a half season. He was pretty good. The big change this year with Colin Ray has been a big jump in ground ball rate, 53% ground ball for Colin Ray. That's typically been like 40%. I love guys who can keep it on the ground, and then you tack on pretty good control, right? 6% walk and a 35% ball rate. If you don't walk guys and keep the ball on the ground, you don't have to have the, you know, the biggest strikeout rate in the world to be somewhat effective. So I feel like Colin Ray's in a similar boat as like Jake Irvin, maybe a little bit better, but very much matchup dependent. Next few matchups at home against Cincinnati, you just check the Wrigley wind report, whether you want to start him or not. At Atlanta, I wouldn't do that. And then at the White Sox on May 17th, I would do that. Those are Colin Ray's next three starts. So hopefully that gives a little bit of a context here as well.
Yep. No, I like that quite a bit. And the more I look at some of these names, it just feels like it's a preview to the Fab preview. Like this could actually be very beneficial. This is what these blue boards are for. For me, it's like to see guys that, you know, we talk about the weekly planner, looking at the starting pitching matchups column you have there. This could correlate with that in a roundabout way to kind of see how things are building together. I am not going to talk about Kyle Freeland. You can't like that's one of your like, guys, but
we're it's just probably not best if you. It's best if you don't let me talk about Kyle Freeland.
Yeah, because he'll start pitching well, and we'll have a problem. But
he does have. I am going to talk about Kyle Freeland. Sorry.
Here we go.
He does have the best combination of swinging strike and ball. Percentage 12% swing strike, better than league average. Ball percentage 33%. I will stop there though. I have been burned by Kyle Freeland like multiple times.
The grain of salt I'll mention, and there's a reason why we've talked about him every year we've done this show, is his skills are usually pretty darn good. Like, there's no denying that. There's also this thing called Coors Field. Just it's undefeated. So even as Chase Dillon
at Philly on May 9th. So that's this week. So
Philly's heating up,
that's dude. This weekend. You throw in that?
No.
I don't think I am either.
No, then it's home versus Arizona, and then it's home versus Texas, and then it's a two-step at the Dodgers and then home versus the Giants. Like, you're not using him in the month of May at all. Like, there's not one start there where I'm using Kyle Freeland. That's just a shame of the situation.
Sounds like a prime candidate for my Vegas auction team.
Yeah, you can get him for a buck, I bet, right now. Knock yourself out. I do want to talk about Keiter Montero, though, because we were talking, you know, earlier about injuries to the rotation in Detroit with Tarek Skubal. And we talked like Keiter Montero kept getting more starts because Verlander had more setbacks. Well, I think Keiter Montero's got some more runway to play with right about now in that rotation. So, digging in on the, like, I picked him up in the Vegas 15, I think, and another 15. I've been streaming him, and the weekly stats don't run off the table, but his ratios are usually pretty good, which I appreciate right now. It's a 14% K to walk, so 19% K, 5% walk. It's only an 8% swinging strike, but a 35% ball. That's where the ratios come into play. Yep. The strikeouts are just very inconsistent. It's 25 Ks and 33 and 2/3. It's been 2 Ks, 5 Ks, 3 Ks, 5 Ks, 7 Ks, 3 Ks. So it's either get a big night or nothing at all, but he really keeps the ball in the park, and I've been happy so far. It's usually a dicey road when he's on the mound, I'll be totally honest, but when we're talking these peripheral streamer guys, like, he's been pretty solid, and another guy whose job seems a lot more secure than it once was.
A lot more secure than it once was. Love the control. Of course, you'd like to see more whiffs. I mean, that's the major thing holding Keiter Montero back. The interesting thing this year with Montero, extreme fly ball guy. And that can work in Detroit, and that can also work early in the season. Some of these colder games, fly balls that don't leave the yard are pretty much outs. And Keiter Montero's got a 53% fly ball rate. So you tack on that fly ball rate, an extreme fly ball rate like that, with a low walk rate, and that kind of locks in a decent whip. Yeah, you're going to have games where two or three of those fly balls leave the yard, and that's a problem. But on nights where they don't, That's very good whip insulation there for Keiter Montero.
Yep, big fan of that one. David Peterson, we kind of know who he is, so I'm good there. I'm not going to make you guys listen to me talk about Patrick Corbin, like, because even the skills aren't that great looking at this page, but he continues to get it done is all I'm going to say. And Brian Baio had another, he's going to go see a specialist now too. So like it,
Brian Baio is.
Yeah. He got lit up in his last rehab start and now he's going to go see a doctor.
I thought he pitched tonight.
No, I'll give me 2 seconds. I'll find you what I put in the Discord earlier.
Yeah, no, he pitched tonight. He won.
Oh, we're talking Brian Baio. I was thinking of, no, I'm talking about Jose Barrios.
Oh, Barrios. Yes. Okay. Because yeah, I was like, how'd you get to Brian Baio from Patrick Corbin? Barrios.
Sorry. Yes. Barrios. Gotcha. Yes. Sorry. He's got some dead arm or something. So he's going to see a dog.
Yes.
Yeah. Going for an MRI tonight after feeling a little more sore than expected. Sorry. My bad. My bad. I was just another bad pitcher.
When in reality, I was going to say the Jose Barrios Brian Baio comp might actually
it's the Spider-Man meme almost. Yeah. So we're good.
It might actually be spot on.
Yeah. So nothing really there. McCullers, I'm good. Jesse Schultens, I guess, is kind of interesting just because also now his role in the Rays rotation seems a little more stable. So I guess let's talk about him for a minute. We got a guy that's 3% rostered in 12s. 18% strikeout rate, 6% walks. So the control's big, correlation to 34% ball rate. But a 10% swinging strike, which is, you know, okay. It's also a reason why he only has 18% strikeouts. What's your thoughts on Schultens? This is a guy that I rostered for a week and I dropped. So, again, stream, which most of these guys can be. Some might stick around longer. Some might be bench streamers is what I'm going to say. But where are you at on a guy like Jesse Schultens, who I've never been overly impressed with, but he's been serviceable?
I mean, not the greatest track record out there, right? Like he's 32, kind of a journeyman, but really has only had that one bad start against Cincinnati. Every other start, 2 runs or less, which is nice. But similar to the other guys we've kind of talked about, like an 18% strikeout rate just isn't gonna get things done. Like a lot of weeks, you're gonna have relievers who get more strikeouts than Jesse Schultens, and that's a problem. So. I'm not too enthused, and I don't think this will end well for Jesse Schultens.
All right. I do want to get your thoughts on Kumar Rocker because I've been very, very biased on Kumar Rocker. And sometimes, you know, when you wear the rose-colored glasses, things can get to you. But Kumar Rocker, he's got the 19% strikeout rate, which I've always feel like should be better than that. 8% walk rate, 11% swinging strike. The ball rate is not great, 39%. But like I've rostered him while I dropped him in a couple leagues this past week. I have a ton of shares of Kumar Rocker. So it was kind of if I went and got Logan Henderson, Kumar Rocker was expendable type thing. He got destroyed by the Tigers in his last start. But prior to that, like he's not lighting the world on fire. He walks too many guys, is what I'll flat out say. And I wish he struck out more. But he, again, it's an annoying phrase, but he's been serviceable. Where are you at a Kumar Rocker? Because like I said, I'm very biased on this situation.
Yeah, I'm not as high. The guy cannot throw strikes, and that's an issue just in terms of your walk rate and being able to pitch deep into games. Rocker's been able to go 6 innings twice, 2 of his 6 starts, which that's pretty good. But the other starts, like you said, he got blown up against Detroit, 2 innings, 4 2/3, 5 and 5. Like it's just hard for Kumar Rocker to pitch deep into games because of the lack of control. And like you said, like it's so reliant on his slider. I'm pretty sure that's still his most thrown pitch. And just feel like MLB hitters know what's coming.
Yeah, no, and I like I said, I get it. He's, again, I'm plugging a piece of work that's coming out tomorrow. My PT tomorrow is speculating on the Rangers bullpen what to do when they have to remove Kumar Rocker from the rotation. So that's kind of what because the problem is let me just cut to the chase. They have nobody. That's the problem. Like, one of the options. Hey
man, devaluing your column for HQ subscribers like that, man.
One of the options is Austin Gomber in AAA, who has an ERA over 8 right now.
Gomber's on the Rangers.
Yeah, with an ERA over 8 in AAA.
So that I can believe. I couldn't believe he's still.
Yeah, it's a rough go for Texas. All right, anybody else on this list that you want to talk about before we go check out some of the other ones?
Not really. It's ugly. And this is why, like when we talked about Robbie Snellinger, this is why these pitchers, the Henderson last week, Jared Ritchie earlier, it's why these pitchers are going for so much money. It's just the availability on the wires is just really bad.
Yes, indeed. All right, let's talk about the skill risers and fallers, Ryan. What are we looking at here?
All right, so this is the biggest improvers, or what I call them last week, de-improvers, deteriorators.
Deteriorators, that's what it was.
In terms of the ability to miss bats via your swinging strike rate and the ability to throw strikes with your ball rate. So I kind of combine those two together, add it up, and see the biggest risers and fallers this season versus last season. This board's littered with very interesting names, both at the top end, the top 15, and the bottom 15. This is an interesting one. A lot of movers here.
Yes, and this one will check out to a lot of things that we've been discussing thus far. But it's one of those, like, if like a little hat tip to the last 30 days one, because like right now we're doing swinging strikes and balls, as you mentioned. So skills that we really want to see, but a lot of those skills can potentially correlate to a K to walk. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep,
there.
Absolutely.
So on the last 30 days board that we won't look at tonight, but K to walk is one of the boards we have there.
Yep.
And I think it's interesting because some of these seasoned guys, this is why I was starting, Randy Vasquez is at the top. He's not on the last 30 day K to walk board. He's not at all, because things have begun to get shaky for Randy Vasquez, but he still has improved drastically. Swinging strike rates got from 7% to 12% in 2026, ball rate from 37 to 35. So the ball rate just, it's improved minor, but it's improved. It's more so that swinging strike, which we know came with an increased velocity. Those are the things we talked about, which you'd also see in the pitch mix change in the last 30 days. If this was a thing, potentially that's a velocity thing. So maybe not, but you know where I'm trying to get with this one. More importantly is, the skills have gotten a little worse. It's been, you know, 5 walks, 6 Ks in his last 2 starts. We saw 4 walks, 6 Ks, 4 starts ago. Still good. Things to get slightly concerned about. What do you think when you see Randy Vasquez in that long-winded, just disaster of an intro?
You're about as hard on yourself as I am on myself. Jeez.
Yep. So we work together.
Yeah. Self-deprecating humor is the key to life, actually.
I'll just stop there.
Don't take yourself too seriously. I'll keep
taking myself down.
Yes. Yeah, just keep talking and digging yourself deeper into a hole. Speaking of digging into holes, this is very front-loaded for Randy Vasquez. So, like, the biggest thing that I worry about is, yeah, you talked about in your long-winded intro there, the velocity bump, and you always just wonder how long into the season can a pitcher sustain such a velocity bump. And so far Vasquez has been able to do it, but yeah, this is very front loaded. I think the first 3-4 starts, Randy Vasquez was just like a machine and has fallen back. Now I think Randy Vasquez can still be a reliable mid rotation guy, because there's some pitch mix changes here in effect, throwing his cutter a lot more and the velocity's higher. This is not the last year of Randy Vasquez that I don't think we're gonna get that version going forward, but I don't know. I think he's just kind of a mid rotation guy. And one of the reasons why he's on this skill risers list so high is because he was so bad last year that he went from terrible to, you know, better than average. And that's a big improvement.
Big improvement indeed. So that does help quite a bit. It's great to see a guy like Cam Schlittler, who's been one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, checks this one with the strikeout, a swinging strike up to 15% from 11%. So that's been great. But like, I want to point to the guy after him, because some of these we've seen just dominate, which makes sense. But then you have Chase Dolander, the cover boy for tonight's show. Chase Dolander has gone from a 10% to a 13% swinging strike rate and a 39% ball rate to 35%. So you're seeing gains in both columns that you really, really want to see with Dolander. This is a guy that in the offseason was discussed as, you know, you can stream him on the road, sit him at home. Yeah, he got smacked around in his last home start. It was against the Braves, who I think we're starting to realize is actually pretty good at baseball right now. Other than that, Dolander was lights out prior to that, and it is showcasing all the fantasy goodness you've wanted to see.
Yeah, and this is just all – there's a really good article out at Baseball HQ, I think on yesterday, from Tanner Smith that – dove into Chase Dolander, changed his arm slot on his fastball, got more rise with the heater. Fastball velocity is up. He's changed his position on the rubber. Just a lot of like little changes for Chase Dolander that have paid off for him. And you're seeing it with a big jump in swinging strikes and a big improvement in walk rate. And I feel like that's somewhat park proof, right? Like I think, you know, if you can throw strikes and miss bats, kind of do that anywhere. I know breaking pitches and whatnot may not break as hard in Coors or whatever, but I think this is pretty legit Chase Dolander. And I think, I mean, he's already owned in fab leagues, but like, I think he can sustain a lot of this. I think you tack on the pedigree that, I mean, Dolander was a very, very highly regarded prospect, and we're starting to see why.
Yeah. He was the one that it was like a year or two ago when people were like, this is the guy that can finally break Coors. And everyone was so excited to finally spend money on a Coors pitcher, and it just blew up in everyone's face. And now he might be closer to actually making that happen. I got to prove it to me when it comes to this, but
I don't think anyone can break Coors, to be honest. No, but I think no one has.
Coors versus Father's Time, both undefeated. The Miz is awesome. There's no denying that. Jack Leiter's picking up where he left off the end last season, where we were all over him with the increased swinging strike. Yes, you highlighted the man we're talking about.
All right,
about.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm out. Yes. I'll catch you all next week, or at least on the Thursday Fab Show. I'll be back then. Until then, I think Bubba will take it from here.
Yes. The guy that even my great co-host here texted me when he sent me the cover art for tonight's show and said, I almost went with Davis Martin, but I couldn't bring myself to it. Davis Martin, he's increased his swinging strike from 9% to 11%. Not a lot, but it works. But the ball rate from 37 to 33%, which is really, really good. We've seen a guy that has allowed 3 runs or less in every start, 2 runs or less in 6 straight, 1 run or less in 4 straight. It's 43 Ks to 8 walks over 44 innings pitched, Ryan, which is good for a 20.7% K to walk rate, which I will take at this point in time. He's got a 3.28 Sierra, which is very, very good. I want to check one more thing real quick before I let you have the floor here, if you'd like.
I'm not going to have much, man. All that I have going through my head is that, remember when in Happy Gilmore when Chubbs tells him, teach him how to putt, and Happy goes, you were right, I was wrong.
I just want to mention, and I know it was the Angels in his last start, homeboy had a 22.4% swinging strike in that game.
He had like 10 strikeouts, didn't he?
Yeah. And the Angel start before that, where he struck out 7, was a 12.2%. He's had a 12% or better swinging strike rate in 3 out of his 7 starts. It's been 9% or better in 5 straight starts. Like, he might actually be getting better as he pitches, is where I'm going with this. This is a guy that used to be like touted as a prospect pitcher, then had injuries. He's 29, so he's like kind of one of those forgotten guys. And by no means do I think he's going to win a Cy Young. Will he get blown up at times? 1,000% expecting it to happen. But we're talking about a guy also that I think will be used throughout the entire season unless something happens. Like, the skills are actually there, is what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, just unbelievable. Unbelievable. A crap on the guy. First Fab Show of the year. And just crazy. A little bit of luck involved, but honestly, not much. I mean, it a huge left on base rate, low homer to fly. That stuff's going to correct. The biggest thing, one of the biggest things with Davis Martin that you didn't hit on, that I'll paint some context here. I got a PitchMix article out on HQ Speculator on Wednesday. Martin is featured in that one. He's now got 6 pitches. Yeah, really hurt to type.
Good to hear.
Now has 6 pitches that he throws over 10% of the time. So throwing more sinkers, throwing more cutters, throwing more changeups. He doesn't throw a single pitch. His most used pitch is a 4-seamer, and that's just over 25% of the time. So he's doing this with a very wide arsenal, which is, I think, points to some staying power too. He's not just relying on like some new pitch that hitters are going to figure out. He's throwing 6 different pitches and doing it effectively. So I'll put that feather in Davis Martin's cap. Two first names, you know, you gotta weigh that into the evaluation as well. But no, he's
take a step back and evaluate, that's for sure. Exactly.
But no, he's been really good in making me eat my words, which I often do this year.
It's interesting you mentioned the pitch mix change, because I don't study that stuff as much as you and others do. I appreciate when you guys bring it up, because it opens my eyes to things. But it is interesting that when you mention the sinker, cutter, 4-seam, at least 10% or more in all three. That's been a trend. Like when I just totally blanked. Oh, crap.
McComas?
Dusty? McComas on. He mentioned it, and I've heard some other people talk about it. Like Crochet was one that I always knew had three fastballs, essentially, is what we call it, a three fastball pitcher. You know, our good buddy Lance Lynn used to be a dominant three fastball pitcher, but you're seeing more people nowadays doing it, more pitchers. Like I mentioned, Crochet,
Schlittler,
I guess the one he might have mentioned, that might have been the one. But some of these kind of quote unquote breakouts this year, you're seeing a lot more three fastball type pitchers, and there's a lot to be said about that because it goes back to tunneling, all that kind of stuff. And now you're just changing movement and velocity with the fastball, which, you know, is a lot more effective to control, I think, than some other pitches. So works very well for them.
And yeah, three of the six pitches for Martin are fastball. It's four seam, sinker, cutter. I mean, those are the three because they go three different directions. So
works out beautifully. I think there's something to that. Like now that we can't, you know, put, you know, tack on the ball to spin things everywhere, we got to figure out other ways to move the pitches. All right. Again, I don't want to talk about everybody. Emerson Hancock's been great. So I'll give you one of your guys. Like we talked about the increased velocity in spring. Like, was it sustainable? Because, man, as bad as Dolander was last year, Hancock was probably worse. Like, it was rough. But he went from a 9% to 12% swinging strike rate, 35 to 34% ball rate. He's coming off an absolute gem. So I'll leave you the floor to talk about one of your Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, this is the latest. And I do think Seattle, even though some of the guys fallen back a little bit this year, I think Seattle deserves some credit as a pitching organization, just what they've been able to do to develop this rotation. And Emerson Hancock is the latest beneficiary of that. Major changes to Hancock's arsenal, throwing the slider almost 30% of the time. Four seam is his most primary pitch at almost 40%, but then he's throwing a sinker in there too. Pretty much has ditched his changeup this year. So it's been more sliders, fewer changeups for Emerson Hancock, and has, because I wrote this in the HQ article as well, one of the best fastballs in the game. So I mentioned the four seam is Emerson Hancock's primary pitch. He's got a 20% swinging strike on a fastball, which is almost double league average, and it's third highest in the majors behind Mizorowski, who's got a 23% swing strike on his four seamer, and Cam Schlittler at 21%. Hancock is third at 20%. So overpowering everybody with his fastball, pairing it with a really good slider that he's throwing more this year, ditching the changeup, just kind of all happening for Emerson Hancock right now. And looks fantastic. Another guy with a prospect pedigree as well.
Yep, there is a trend to some of these. Gavin Williams, seeing him on this list is nice, even though he got hit around a little bit on Tuesday. Let's talk about some of the deteriorators, if that's okay with you. Shane Boz, who is a weekly do I even try to start situation, is on this board. Swinging strike is down, ball rate's up, and that's what's frustrating because I love the skills. I loved leaving that minor league ballpark, and the skills have disappeared, Ryan.
They have. Did you start him this week? You were debating because he had the two-step.
I did, and it was great until his manager is a complete freaking moron. And like, I'm watching the game as I think I was recording with Ben, and like the first two pitches were like wild pitches, and he just couldn't find the strikes on walks the first two guys. And I'm just like, why is he even still pitching? And then it turns into a four-run inning, man, just implodes. It was baffling that. Then there's another guy later at night that I remember I tweeted about, just horrific managing. In so baseball,
you think they should have taken him out, Boz?
Oh yeah. Oh, it was J.I. Ritchie also. Yeah, both guys. Like neither one could throw a strike to save their lives. So when they finally grooved it over the middle of the plate, they're getting smacked around the ballpark. It was just like, come on, man. Like, how do you guys not notice this crap? You guys overmanage games anyways. What are we doing here? But yeah, you love getting me fired up in the
That's
evening.
That's my leading question. That worked perfectly. Hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah. God, I was like, it was so tilting.
I really shouldn't do all this to you. It's like late at night. You got more articles and crap to write.
No, it's fine. It was just so frustrating because I was telling Ben like before the show, I'm like, if I could just get like five or six innings of three runs or less, like just give me a quality start, I will take that right now, the way pitching is. And he was doing that. Shane Boz was doing that until his moron of a manager left him out there too long. And it was just like, I can't do it with some of these guys anymore. It was so much fun.
Oh, that was good. I can't follow that up for Shane Boz.
Other than that, like, it's crazy that Tariq Skubal's skills deteriorated, yet he was still like better than anybody on this board.
Right, and like, look how green the swing. It's actually a little interesting that Crochet and Skubal are both on this list, like right next to each other.
Scooble, like, is this the injured section of the board?
Right. I mean, if your skills suddenly deteriorate like this, even if they're still good compared to league average, a lot of times that could be a indicator for injury. So, I mean, obviously now Crochet School is nothing to really talk about, but they were both on this list.
I do want to mention Justin Robleski, because we joke about it all the time. Like, he keeps throwing these innings of like one or zero runs, but like there's never a strikeout. And supports here with a 6% swinging strike rate down from 10%, a 35% ball rate up from 33%. It's just amazing how his smoke and mirror act take place.
Yeah, I think I tweeted this out. Robleski's last start literally did not have a strikeout. It was zero Ks, one walk, and zero earned runs. So that's Robleski. I could always be wrong, and I know I lean on the skills and the stats a little bit too much sometimes. So maybe Robleski's doing something with hard contact or whatever that we're not seeing. I think this guy is going to blow up, but I think you have to keep rolling with him. You have to until it does.
And this board checks out when you have Jack Flaherty on here. And then Sonny Gray, who you and I are both very concerned about even before the hamstring injury.
Yep.
Is at 12% swinging strike rate last year, down to 8%, 34% ball rate up to 39%. He has looked, it's been bad. He comes back. I think he might pitch Wednesday actually against Detroit. I don't know, a guy coming off a hamstring, not sure I'd throw him out there in like 45 degree weather, but again, I don't manage these teams.
That's how he got hurt the first time in the cold-ass Patriots Day game at 3 in the morning.
I'm assuming it's going to be cold in Detroit. It's cold everywhere else. It's 8 inches of snow in Denver on Tuesday, so that front should be going towards Detroit. But, let's keep getting me fired up. Anything else on this board?
Yes, we do. You skipped over a notable name that we should talk about.
Kyle Leahy, Jacob Lopez, Zach Lyle.
No, Bubba.
He's got green. The guy you're talking about has green there. Let's not knock it.
We got to talk some Cole Reagans. Sonny Gray. I'll finish my thought on Sonny Gray. He is the worst deteriorator in skills from 2026 to 20. Like, I'm legitimately very worried about Sonny Gray. Like, not even hamstring, whatever. Like, I think that hamstring thing was just kind of random. I was very worried about Sonny Gray before that. You tack on the age for Sonny Gray, like, there's a chance this kind of snowballs. So I'm, even though Sonny Gray's back, too late this week for lineup changes, but like I'm very like I would not want to pitch him on Wednesday against Detroit, but we'll see.
All right, talk about your Cole Reagans if you're so
well. I mean, I just have no idea. Like, I don't know. I mean, you have Reagans, so you follow him more than I do. So Cole, just to give some context, he's the fourth biggest deteriorator in skills, from a swinging strike of 16% last year to 12% this year, which is from elite to still above average. So that's why it's green on the sheet if you're viewing on YouTube, his swinging strike rate. But the control, the ball rates, it's gone from 35% ball rate last year, get 36 is the league average, up to 39% this year. That's really bad for Cole Reagans. But I just don't know, like, you look at this guy's game log, it's like
it's wild.
He was left for dead after he walked 8 in one game.
Everyone thought he was going straight to the IL.
But then the next time he strikes out 11 with no walks. So like, how do you even?
Thank you, Angels.
Maybe that's it. So the Angels can kind of hit this year.
They've been slumping for like 2 weeks.
I don't know what to think with Cole Reagans. That 11K outing like just baffled my mind.
Well, then the Seattle outing, like, if you watched it, like, if you see the box score, it's 5 1/3, 4 earned, 3 homers, 3 walks, 8 Ks. Like, if you watch that game, I know home runs are home runs, but, like, two or two, one was to like J-Rod and one was it a Rosarena or something? Like, you can kind of let those slide, one BS one to Connor Joe. It's just one of those, if you keep the ball in the ballpark, obviously things change. And the last three games have been home run games for him, where he had a three-game stretch of none. It's just every start's a different experience with Cole Reagans. Like, still elite strikeout skills, like, overall. They deteriorated from last year, but still some of the best in the game.
Yeah.
It's just, like, to your point, the control is so bad that I think the home runs have been up lately because he's trying to avoid the walks. He's not as comfortable. He's not getting the chase maybe as much. And that's been his biggest problem. Like, he gets Cleveland on Wednesday. It should be a good game. We'll see. Then he gets a two-step at the White Sox, at the Cardinals. Like, you're going to pitch him every game. But,
yeah,
it's just, you just buckle up.
That's all you can do. But, I don't know if he's hurt or not. Like, because he's still, I mean, to have these types of strikeout skills, like, I don't know. It's still pretty good.
Yes, indeed. All right, last one we got here, luckiest and unluckiest, ERA versus Sierra. What's your what are we looking at here real quick?
So this is just straight difference between ERA and Sierra, but I've added on the three, what I call them luck factors, and we kind of traditionally call them at HQ. These are kind of the three things that are mostly outside of a pitcher's control. In the aggregate, these should be near league average. There are always exceptions to the rule. Kyle Hendricks did this for years and kind of beat out everything, but you've got your BABIP, which is your batting average on balls in play. Left on base rate, so that's the percentage of base runners that you allow that don't score. So the higher the number there, the theoretically luckier you are from an ERA standpoint. And then homer to fly ball. Well, we've done research for years and years and years. A pitcher can't really control their homer to fly ball rate. It in the aggregate, it will regress back to league average from either side. So kind of looks at those three factors so you can kind of see how the pitcher has been lucky or unlucky so far.
And looky there, Justin Robleski at the top of the
number board. One, so Justin Robleski. That seals it up, right? It's a 0%. The guy has not allowed a home run all year, which again, good for him, but that's going to change. 125 ERA, 540 Sierra.
And we'll kind of go through some of these pretty quickly because most of these guys are streamers at best. Not all of them, but like Nick Martinez is the guy we talked about. He's got a two-step this week, so he got widely added. But you're waiting for that other shoe to drop. That 90% left on base rate, yeah. Rate literally echoes that sentiment. I want to go straight to, like, I mean, it's Arrighetti I'm concerned with every time out because of his control. That's not even on this board. But I want to go to Bryce Elder because this is a guy that people have been locked in on, and I have too. Like, I just pretty much lock and load him. I was nervous tonight. He survived Seattle once again. But it's a 188 ERA, but a 407 Sierra. It's a 252 BABIP, 79% left on base rate, 5% home run to fly ball. Like, the left on base is still high, but are you at least get reasonable with it? You'd expect a higher BABIP. The home run to fly ball is like, they usually don't correlate together. Either you're a ground ball guy and you have a high BABIP, or you're a fly ball guy with a low BABIP, you give more home runs. So it's at least that's where my brain goes when I look at those two correlating. What's your thoughts on Elder? Like I said, didn't get the win tonight, but it was 6 innings, 2 runs, 3 walks, 9 Ks. Like, got the job done once again in Seattle.
Yeah, I'm always going to lean more to what the Sierra, what the skills tell me. I think Elder's fine. I think I've also crapped on him before and been proven wrong with Bryce Elder.
You have lots of shares over here.
Yeah, and of course the freaking guy is a 180 ERA.
Yep, locked in the draft champions league. Doesn't mean I'm winning because I suck at those, but yes, here we are.
There are more and more of these examples we could name this year. Bryce Elder,
don't worry, we will.
He has legitimately improved. Like, Bryce Elder used to be awful, and now he's
right.
I mean, he's half decent to the point where I think you start him pretty much any time out, and he's probably like a decent SP4 for you. Yep. I'd like to see more. I mean, for Bryce Elder to take the next step, you got to have more whiffs and more strikeout upside. You listed it out, so I'm not going to repeat all the numbers, but not enough strikeouts for me for Bryce Elder to think he holds anything close to a 2 or even 3 ERA the rest of the way. But at a high mid-high 3s ERA type guy in this pitching environment with a job, it's not bad at all.
I've been pretty happy with that. Let's talk Noah Schultz. He was one of the first, there was others, but first big fab acquisition, at least prospect pitchers that was called up. He's got a 253 ERA, a 471 Sierra, but a 173 BABIP with a 73% left on base and a 5% home run to fly ball. So he's getting it done, and like looking at his work of late, I'm sitting there going, man, like, I was really not aggressive at all on him. His first start, I was like, okay, 4 walks, 4 Ks, we're good. He's pitched really well since then. It's been 8 walks and 16 strikeouts over his last 17 innings pitched with 3 earned runs. That'll play. What are your thoughts, though, when you look at this skill set? Because like, part of me is thinking this can't be sustainable.
I'm quite low on Noah Schultz, actually. Yeah. Like, I just, the control was a problem coming up in the minors. The control is a problem now. I mean, he's walked three or more in all but one of his major league starts. So I think, like, congrats. You got four good starts so far to Noah Schultz if you spent up. Like, then that counts. But I think these fun times are going to end, I think, very quickly for Noah Schultz. And then you tack on the fact that just the volume, we talked about this when Schultz was coming up in Fab. There's just not much of a volume history here either. So, like, how late is Noah Schultz going to pitch into the season? It's kind of the other thing. So, I don't know. If you're in a trading league, I think this is the ultimate sell high for me. It's just way too many walks for this to even remotely look like this.
Yep. I'm going to jump down to Jose Soriano, a guy
that's
that we love.
One. Yeah, that's the one.
That has been great all season until his last two starts, both against the White Sox. Literally one earned run in his first six starts. He's faced the White Sox twice in a row, eight earned runs over nine innings pitched. But you look at the stats, it's a 1.74 ERA, 3.41 CR. Honestly, I'll take 3.41 right now. Like, sign me up for that. 250 BABIP, 95% left on base rate, though, is for a ground ball pitcher to have a low BABIP like that with that left on base rate. I know you're probably going to hit on all this. Wild. So what are your thoughts when you see this from Soriano? Because, again, like I said, I'll take the 3.41 right now. That's what he ends up pitching towards. But this feels like massive regression's coming.
Same. It is. I mean, and you don't need to listen to us say a 1.74 ERA isn't going to hold or whatever. He had like a .3, .4 ERA for April or something.
Before he faced the White Sox, yes.
A couple interesting things with Soriano. He's still getting ground balls, but the ground ball rate has like collapsed. It was the best in the game last year, 65% ground balls last year. This year, 52. So like still good, but not quite the just like otherworldly ground ball rate guy. The trade-off has been he's throwing more four seamers, getting more whiffs and more strikeouts. And I think that's a trade-off we can make, right? The K rate's up 8% from 21 to 29. So you really like that. I'm with you, man. I still think Jose Soriano is pretty good. I would also take a 3.40 ERA the rest of the season and be totally fine with that. I don't think this is like a true breakout. I there's enough flaws in the skill set. Like, the walk rate's still double digit, and you're not getting that elite ground ball rate anymore. You can still be good, but I don't think I think mid threes is the expectation here.
I'll just be nice and give you credit. Davis Martin is on this list still. 3.28
CR, I mean, I'll take. Yeah, I'll take all, I mean, again, numbers, you're lucky. Everyone who has a sub 2 ERA is lucky. There has to be some. I mean, unless it's like peak Verlander or Roy Halladay or whatever. But Davis Martin, the Sierra, is a 3.28. That's really good. Yep. So no victory lap here for me.
But I just wanted to mention him because I wanted to get accused of passing on guys like I'd done before. No.
Oh, you would have been accused. No doubt. I'm joking.
Let's drop down for a few down here. I want to highlight. There's a handful, actually. I'll start with Jack Leiter, though, just because we did talk about the gains that Jack Leiter has made. I can't remember which one we were talking. Oh, in the swinging strike and ball percentage, one of the mid of the pack gainers. But you look at the unluckiest, this correlates as well. 5.45 ERA, but a 3.53 Sierra. 3.23 BABIP, 68% left on ball rate, 19% home run to fly ball. And like those stats, I've watched like his last three starts at least, and it's been 5 earned, 4 earned, 3 earned, 3 earned, 5 earned. It's the long ball has played in factors here, but strikeouts are still so good with him. He seems like he's so close every time out there to being almost like very, very, very good. I'm not going to say elite, but very, very good. So I like seeing him on this board, to be totally honest.
The homers have killed Jack Leiter. 19% homer to fly. I mean, that's it's hard to have good surface stats when you give that many homers. And again, I don't think that is sustainable. I think the homers are going to regress back. So it's interesting showing, and actually I'm showing the board like this for those watching by design. Our two luckiest guys and Jack Leiter, the guys who just talked about, Jose Soriano, Davis Martin, Jack Leiter, all pretty much the same same general skills.
Yep, I like that.
With an ERA of 1.74, 1.64, and then for Leiter, 5.45, respectively. How would you rank these three rest of season starting today?
It's a great question. Whew, like, I still think Jack Leiter is the best of the bunch. like, which is terrifying. I'd probably stick with Soriano if those, if the fastball gains are, but the Davis Martin with the six, this is tricky.
It's just interesting seeing those three right next to each other.
It's three different types of pitchers, if that makes sense. That's very interesting. And the other thing is, well, one's going to positively regress, the other two probably negatively, but it's not a massive negative regression. I'd probably take Davis Martin out of those three.
Okay.
But I like Jack Leiter probably the most long-term out of the three. Like, yeah, it's tough. It's real tough.
I was going to say Soriano, Leiter, Martin, but...
like, I have shares of all three of them, like, widely rostered. So, like, I like them all, obviously. But they're all very good. Very good pitchers.
Yeah. It's a perfect representation of what these luck factors, how they can screw with your ERA. With Jack Leiter compared to the other two, Soriano and Martin.
Yeah, I want to highlight just a couple more here, and then we'll wrap things up. It is interesting to see Emmett Sheehan is another guy, though. The home runs have crushed him. They've kind of gotten, like, he gave up two in his last start, but he had a stretch there with no homers. Strikeouts have been up. I've never been a Sheehan guy, but he's pitching better. If you got anything on him?
No, not really. Pitching better than I thought, too. I want to pull up Sheehan. I don't have any of them either, so I... yeah, Sheehan's last two starts, 18 strikeouts, one walk. That's incredible. So maybe something has been found, or maybe it's just two random good starts in late April, early May. But Emmett Sheehan, yeah, I did not realize he was pitching this good. His last two starts have been so good that it's basically brought everything back.
I want to highlight Lizardo. Like, we never really panicked. He's still freaking awesome. It might get a lot better before it gets worse on that,
like,
one.
A lot better. Jesus Lizardo is the only pitcher on this list with a sub-3 Sierra. It's really hard to have a Sierra that good. And Jesus Lizardo is rocking a 5+ ERA. The damage has been done, but I think Jesus Lizardo is still really good.
Yeah, but if you can withstand it the rest of the way, you'll be just fine. Another one I want to mention here, because I'm just picking on the guys with some massive, like, we're talking about there's two guys, sub-3, and that's Matthew Boyd. He has an ERA of 6, a 2.83 Sierra. We're talking about a dude with a 377 BABIP, 50% left on base rate, and a 9% home run to fly ball. Boyd bounced back in his last start, 2 runs in 6 innings. It's been 2 bad starts out of 3. He spent some time on the IL, but, like, if you look at his starts, he's actually been pretty good. It's been very unlucky for Matthew Boyd.
31 strikeouts to 6 walks for Matthew Boyd. Yep. That's actually, like, elite. Yep. So I did not realize that, and I have Matthew Boyd, so
he's been awesome. He had that, like, really bad start. I was nervous the last start because it's like Monday, I think it's Monday or Sunday, and the wind was blowing out in Wrigley. I'm like, god dang it. But he survived. It might even was Sunday. He survived. All right, anybody else you want to discuss on the boards here before we wrap things up?
No, we don't need to. We don't need to finish it out with Brian Bayo or Taiwan Walker, I don't think. Dude, I think we're good. Walker,
he's gone. 9.12 and 9.13 ERAs. Like, dudes nearly have a double-digit ERA.
Bayo did shove tonight. He was a follower. I think had 7 Ks, 7 innings, 1 run. I don't know where or how that came to be. But, yeah, this is the both unlucky and bad tier. Miles Mikolas. We can throw him in there with Bayo and Taiwan Walker too.
If you ever are in a grouping with Miles Mikolas, just realize this is not for you.
Remember the 1 year Mikolas was like a legend? God, that was
when he first came back from the KBO, and we're like, oh wow, you can get fixed over there.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, not usually. Apparently not. Dude, I know it's not the KBO, but we're talking Japan, Tatsuya Imai. Holy shnikes, his rehab start on Tuesday was horrible. So I don't know what they're gonna do with him. Like, that's a bad situation right now.
5 walks, I think.
Yeah, I think he threw like 65 pitches and 2 1/3 or something crazy like that. It's not good. Not good over in that situation either. All right, final thoughts before we wrap things up.
I don't think so, man. I need to let you go. You've got things to do. People to see.
Yeah, something like that.
Steaks to grill.
We got tri-tips and chicken and sausage. We got all kinds of stuff to cook on Wednesday. So
I saw your eyes light up, and you got a little pep in your step now. It's good.
I'm looking forward to being done with it. It's a big one. Yeah. So I've been doing a lot of work for that. Thursday can't come soon enough. But we'll have some fun with it as usual. We'll have fun with you guys Thursday night, previewing the Week 8 Fab coming your direction. But I hope you guys enjoy the Bloom Board episodes. I thoroughly do, because there's always things I gain out of them by looking at them. That's why, again, humble thing here is I enjoy looking like the last 30 days. We'll start doing those down the road here.
Yeah.
To kind of see where guys are moving and shaking. And those, you can really see some things that stand out along those Bloom boards. And they're quick to look at. And Ryan updates them every morning. So it's as up to date for 30 days as you can possibly get as you look at them. So check all that stuff out if you're interested. It's patreon.com/BubbaBloom. You can follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at BubbaBloomPod. I'm at BD Entrick. And until next time, this was Bubba in the Bloom, episode 344. Catch y'all later.